All right.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and over there on the other end of the internet is Mr. David A. Pascarella.
Hello there.
Hello there. How you doing?
All right. How about you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. We're doing a Superman wedding episode today, and I think if anybody knows about weddings, it's me and Dave.
Yeah, we liked it so much, we did it twice.
Exactly. And you know, to commemorate that, Superman is gonna get married twice.
But at least it took him two different Earths to do it twice.
Well, it almost took two Earths for me to do it a second time. But no regrets. Life is good. At least that's what I keep telling myself.
And that's why you're all cordially invited to join us for this.
Yeah, you're cordially invited to Paul and Dave talk about Superman's weddings. But, you know, the one thing that does stand out to me is, having been through two weddings, the planning is intense. Even if you're letting the future bride do most of it, which is what I've done. But like in these, it just seems like, oh, yeah, we'll get it. Well, there's a little bit more in the second one, the planning.
Just a little bit more compared to the first one.
Yeah, but it's still not nearly as intense. You know, it's, we got to figure out the outfit we're going to wear. You know, we got to have a party. Yeah, that's it.
Once the powder blue tuxedos went out of vogue, that was the end of that.
Now, and that's a conversation I was planning on having when we get to your issue, when we talk about style. And we will talk about it when we get to your issue. But I have my high school. I went to high school from 76 to 80. And my senior prom was the spring of 1980. And back then, the pastel colors were in vogue. So I had a group of friends, probably between 20 and 30 of us, that all kind of, you know, got together for the pre-prom party and went together. And of all of the guys, one guy had a black tuxedo. Everybody else had something else. And we all made fun of him. Oh, what are you going to a funeral? You know, that kind of thing. And now when you see pictures, it's like he's the only one who's maintained a level of class from then to now.
I knew someone who knew someone who, on the day of their wedding, they showed up at the bride's house beforehand wearing a powder blue tuxedo and a ruffled shirt just to mess with his future wife. And of course, when he arrived at the church, he had a black tuxedo.
That's great.
Talk about putting effort into it.
You got to appreciate the just the angst that he must have caused with that.
So you're going to use your powder blue tuxedo as the picture for this episode?
I didn't have a powder blue. I had it was more like a tannish, you know, I don't even know what you'd call it, but it was ugly.
Did it have a ruffled shirt? With dark piping around the edges?
I don't think I had a ruffled shirt, but I didn't have a nice, you know, one of those traditional ones with the lines that go down. I didn't have that either. So maybe it did have some ruffles that I don't remember, but I don't think so. I think it was just a plain white shirt with the black studs.
Do you think at that time that there was some LSD in the water or something that caused people generally to think this was a good look? Well, I mean, you look at the Towering Inferno, and William Holden's got a wild outfit too.
Have you seen the fashions from the 1970s?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I clearly think they were all influenced by, you know, hallucinogenics of some sort. But, you know, such is life.
C'est la vie.
You know, I was thinking, you know, this is like our fourth or fifth Superman score episode. And I'm not getting tired of it yet. I hope the listeners aren't, but you know, it's nice to give Superman the love he deserves.
Yes, since usually they dump on him for everybody else.
And I did get an email. I should read it because I've asked for emails, and when I finally get one, I should praise. It's actually about the movie, but just the same. It's from Socrates, friend of the show. And he says, "Hey, Benz, it's been a while since my last email. I'm still a huge fan of your back issue conversations. I wanted to send my spoiler-free opinion of the new Superman movie in case you do one of the shameless obligatory movie tie-in episodes." Well, as you're probably aware by now, Socrates, this is like the fourth one. It's great. It's fun. I'm not happy with everything added, but Superman, Lois, Jimmy, Lex, Ma and Pa, and Krypto are well acted and portrayed. I hope you all enjoy the movie. Best regards, Socrates Alvarez. Now, Socrates, you can feel free to listen, if you haven't already, to our episode of Is It Yours, where we reviewed the movie, and I think it goes without saying that we really enjoyed it. Yeah. I've now watched it for the third time this week, you know, and I still get a big kick out of it.
Yeah, I'm a two, and I still love it.
So for...
Thank you for writing in, by the way.
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate the opinions, and Socrates has always been great as far as chiming in and letting us know how he, you know, what he thinks of things, and he's actually been a big supporter of the show. We went to Urban Legend Comics one day, and Socrates actually had bought us gift cards so that we could, so that some of the comics we bought were on him, which, you know, it was above and beyond, but it was also beyond appreciated.
Very.
I felt bad using it, but I felt good using it too. So I chose for this one, you know, and I originally did it thinking we were going to make this as another Legends of the Justice Society episode, and make it a score episode for Superman. And so I did, you know, when Earth 2 Superman Gets Married, which was in Action Comics number 484. It had a 35-cent price tag. For what it's worth, I thought this was a key issue way back then, which it was released March 20th of 1978. I thought it was a big enough deal back then that I bought two copies of it, and I still have two copies. The cover date on it is June of 1978. The cover is by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, praise be his name, and it's inked by Dick Giordano. The cover has an inset with the cover of Action Comics number one and declaring this is the 40th anniversary issue. It shows, the main cover shows Superman in flight holding Lois in a wedding dress on his shoulder and also holding a car with cans and shoes tied to the bumper. They tell us now in this extra length anniversary story, he performs his most sensational feat. Superman Takes a Wife. Superman Takes a Wife is also the title of the story. It's written by Cary Bates, penciled by Kurt Swan, inked by Joe Giala, East Meadow's own Joe Giala, who passed away not that long ago, unfortunately. Colored by Tatiana Wood, lettered by Ben Oda, edited by Julia Schwartz. Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel with his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, long ago decided that there was one woman in the world he loved so deeply that he had to have her by his side. And so begins the series of astounding events revealed here for the first time, leading up to the momentous day when Superman takes a wife. One day in the massive galaxy building, that majestically towers over Midtown Metropolis, Sorry, wrong Earth. The events you are about to witness never happened to the Superman who is secretly Clark Kent, anchorman for WGBS-TV and the Galaxy Broadcasting System, for he lives on Earth 1 in 1978. The settings of the story is Earth 2, a coexisting world in a parallel dimension, not identical, but similar to its twin in many respects. Our story takes place on that Earth, where a robotic group of mechanical marauders are seen flying above the city of Metropolis, each carrying two bags of cash. Superman confronts the group, knocking one's block off like a Rock'em Sock'em robot and using its robotic husk to smash the others. The whole scene is being watched from afar by the tragically attired Colonel Future and his underlings, who declares his intention to wipe out the Man of Tomorrow. Cut to the Daily Star building, where Clark is back, having phoned in his story about Superman and the Mechanical Marauders. Lois, as nosy as ever, has set up a camera in the storeroom in an effort to prove that Clark is, in fact, Superman. But the film is washed out. Colonel Future has the Wizard brought in and comes to an agreement that he'll remove Superman from the face of the Earth in exchange for the Glastonbury Wand, which is reputed to have been crafted by Merlin. The following day, Lois and Clark are out walking when Clark shoves Lois out of the way of an oncoming ray blast shot by members of the CF gang at an armored car. Clark makes a getaway in order to change into Superman and incapacitates a mugger without knowing it because he's preoccupied with thoughts of the CF gang. He captures the two flunkies that robbed the armored car, but is transported away by a spell from the Wizard, who then uses an incantation to make Superman cease to exist, and he disappears. Hours later, Clark rises from the ashes where Superman disappeared. Without his secret identity to inhibit him, Clark truly becomes a crusading reporter and starts dating Lois, culminating in the two of them getting married, with Jimmy as best man, Lucy Lane as maid of honor, a flower girl who I assume is Lois's niece, and an older man who is probably Lois's father, Sam Lane. For the honeymoon, the lovebirds go to the Bahamas, but danger lurks in the form of an underwater vessel manned by Colonel Future's goons, who shoot Clark as he swims because of his reporting on their activities. When it has no effect or is even noticed by Clark, they assume the gun is faulty. Having witnessed the attack, Lois runs to Clark and is shocked to find him unscathed. That night, as he sleeps, Lois tests her theory by trying to cut Clark's hair, and the scissors strangely break instead of bend or stop. Maybe Lois has superpowered strength that we don't know about.
Neither did she know about it.
Yeah. When they return to Metropolis, Lois researches the 53 crooks that have tried to take credit for Superman's disappearance, ultimately landing on the Wizard and finding him sleeping on a park bench, destitute, since no one believed his claim and he lost all confidence. Lois is unable to sleep because she knows that she will need to engineer Superman's return and assumes that it will be the end of their marriage. The following day, a press conference is held, and the Wizard, desperate to show the world his abilities, casts a spell to summon Superman back, which is exactly what happens. Superman backhands the Wizard and declares he'll be going to prison, and Colonel Future watches on TV with dread. Back at the apartment, Lois is packing, and Superman returns to declare his love and proposes that they get married in a Kryptonian ceremony. He brings her to his Fortress of Solitude, where they exchange vows before the statues of his Kryptonian parents. Back in when this came out, this seemed a lot more epic to me than it does now. Now it seems more of a small story. And I kind of appreciate it for its smallness. I think it's just kind of cool the way they put it all together. They kept the threat to be serious enough for him to lose his identity and all of that, but not really threaten him to speak of, but threaten Metropolis. So I think, you know, it was all pretty cool. But the focus is really on them. But, you know, like the compressed stories of this day and age, it all happened very, very fast. If this came out now, this would at least be six to 10 issues at a minimum.
a miniseries.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah, well, look, when we get to the next one, you'll see it's like 900 pages.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the art is kind of what the art was of that day, of that era. But, you know, I think the most troubling thing in the art is just these costumes that Colonel Future and his gang wear.
Oh, that's the worst part of the book. If that's the future, I'm going to stay here in the past. I mean, that's weirder than what the Jetsons used to wear.
It's funny when you think about it, though, because, you know, back then they would never seriously think about changing the status quo to the point of having Superman get married. But because they had Earth 1 and Earth 2, they could have their cake and eat it too. They could have him get married, but still have him single on the main storylines. Because then they followed this up with, what was it, Mr. and Mrs. Superman? They had the right. You know, like a short-lived backup series.
Was that in Superman Family? I think it was.
I think it was a backup story in Action Comics for a while, I think. I'm not even sure.
They had that. And then I think it was like a rotating strip.
Yeah, I think it moved into Superman Family eventually.
I bought this off the stands, and I was a whoppingly 7 years of age, and I bought into this. I was like, oh, wow, look at this. Superman's getting married. This is going to be a major issue.
Well, I thought it was major enough to buy two of them.
I didn't even realize there was the whole Earth 2 thing at that point. That might have been my first exposure to Earth 1 and Earth 2.
Well, they did have, you know, I mean, All-Star Comics was coming out around this time with the Justice Society. So, you know, you did have some, you know, if you were seeing enough issues, you'd have enough to know about the Earth 1, Earth 2 situation.
Yeah, my finances were quite limited back in 1978.
At 8, I would imagine so. So you read this around the same time I did.
Yeah.
And as an 8-year-old, you know, were you awed by it?
I was awed by it. Though I think even at 8, I thought Superman was a dick at the end of the issue when he knocks out the wizard.
Well, but I thought that was actually called for.
Well, he could have left him, you know, mind wiped, so to speak. He kind of did the right thing in the end, and it went to prove no good deed goes unpunished.
But he didn't do it for the right reasons. He did it for personal gain and ego.
I guess, yes.
Because he became destitute when people didn't believe him, and then, you know, he lost confidence and lost his abilities.
Now, when you look at what he looks like when he's, shall we say, down and out in Metropolis, does he not look like Waylon Jennings a little bit?
I had never thought about that. Yeah, there's this. Except I'm pretty sure Waylon Jennings has pupils.
That's true. But, you know, if he pulls his hat down.
And, you know, I don't remember reading any of the Mr. and Mrs. Superman issues after this or stories after this. Did you?
I have no memory of that.
I'm assuming Colonel Future was a significant ongoing bad guy in that.
I really don't. I don't think so. I'm just. I thought I had looked it up. I don't think we see Colonel Future again.
Let me see. I have the
A revamped version.
I have the DC Wiki page
open. If only we had some device we could use to look this up.
Yes, Edmund Future. This version of Colonel Future, including all history and corresponding appearances, was erased from existence following the collapse of the original multiverse in the 1985-86 Crisis on Infinite Earths, and later restored following the rebirth of the Infinite Multiverse during the Dark Crisis of 2022 and 2023. Even though other versions of the character may have appeared, this information does not apply to those versions. character and his real name are nods towards longtime Superman scribe Edmund Hamilton, probably best known for reading public as the creator of the pulp hero Captain Future.
Mm.
He has appeared apparently 5 times, and I'm clicking on that to see where they are.
Wow, I didn't think he ever came back.
He appeared in Action Comics 484, which is what we're doing, Superman 327, Superman Family 198, Superman Family 220, and DC Retroactive Superman, the 70s volume 11, which must be a reprint of it.
It
looks like 4 appearances in reality.
Hmm. Okay.
They don't really give a character history, though.
I know he appears in Crisis. Who's Who? He's got an entry. But I don't think there's much more in that than what's here.
Yeah, well, maybe somebody will want to do a Colonel Future podcast.
You know, it would be easy to complete. Maybe they'll come out with a limited run series now. You know, they're always mining old stuff that we've seen over and over again.
Yeah, why not?
Colonel Future, the man behind the myth.
The man who married Superman.
I actually have this issue autographed by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. I got it autographed when we went to Comic-Con.
He was one of the people who I did not get time to see at Comic-Con because his line was just too long. I don't know if you had an easier experience than that or if you just waited it out.
No, when I went, I think there were only maybe 1 or 2 people in front of me.
He had a table near where George Perez was, and George Perez's line was absolutely ridiculous. And I think fallout from that line formed the line for Mr. Lopez. So either way, it was like there was just a backup of people that I was like, okay, I can't wait.
They said Paul's coming. Everyone just block it off. Maybe he'll go away.
Yeah, whatever I decided to do, they all ran over and went there first.
Right, exactly. Well, you need to stop announcing. I'm going over.
Yeah, that would help.
This is a fun issue, though.
Yeah, I said the only thing that stood out to me, which I mentioned during the synopsis, was the fact that Lois squeezed the scissors hard enough for the metal to break. That seems a little off to me.
That was like a trope they constantly use, though. I think there's an old cover where he's getting a haircut or trying to get a haircut and the barber's scissors break.
Yeah, I kind of remember that, too. But, you know, that's not what would happen.
Yeah, I could see them breaking, falling apart, but not snapping off like that.
Yeah, breaking, falling apart, or stopping.
Yeah. Which is the most likely, you would think. Let's experiment. Get a piece of metal and try and cut it.
Come over here with your hair.
For when we make this a YouTube podcast.
So Superman's wearing the Speedo when he's swimming.
It is the late 70s.
Another trope of the time. It's Banana Hammock Superman.
I love how they use the whole opening from the TV show, like verbatim.
Well, I've always loved that opening, so that's why I incorporated it into my synopsis as well.
Looking at the second page, the guy on the right is clearly ripped off Jimmy Olsen's outfit.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I didn't notice that.
The mechanical monsters. I love they took that from the Fleischer series.
Yes. Yeah, they definitely were trying to call back the earlier era. Although, you know, he's definitely, you know, he's not the leaping over the building Superman. He's definitely the empowered Superman.
Yeah.
They never really explain how it all goes about as far as the Superman dissolving into the S symbol and then Clark Kent rising out of it later, and that the Wizard apparently wasn't even aware that this was going on.
It's very, what's the word I'm looking for? Cerebral, you know what I mean? Like very
surreal.
Surreal, not cerebral. Surreal, yes.
Like you know, you can almost hear like eerie music as he comes up from the mm-hmm. symbol.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm looking at Colonel Future now, and I'm thinking these outfits would be great if they were on Krypton.
Yeah,
at that's the time, true. That's the goofy suits they kind of wore. Lois trying to find out if Clark is Superman. She almost got another. She could have gotten one of the first. You know what kind of picks?
The kind of, first what?
The you know what kind of picks?
Oh. Yeah, really.
God.
But you know, I think. Well, not really. I was going to say I think that was more of a, you know, a Golden Age Earth One Superman, Earth Two Superman thing. But then in the Silver Age, they had to doing that stupid stuff too, which yeah. that is Earth One.
They have. See, I'm up to in my read through. I'm up to 45. No, I'm up to early 46. And every once in a while, she has that suspicion. But it's not really a trope yet. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's kind of odd, you know. But it's not it's not the diet of that it's going to become later on.
They had numerous issues, especially when they had the series, you know, Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane. There were numerous issues where it was, oh, they're getting married or whatever, but it was always, you know, oh, it's an imaginary story or, you know, whatever it is. So this one seemed more just significant because it wasn't a, you know, quote unquote, imaginary story.
Right.
It was really Superman got married. So you could, you know, that, you know, fantasy or whatever that people may have had, you know, was becoming a reality on.
This isn't a dream. This isn't a fantasy. This is real.
And then the fact that they were going to continue it at the time seemed to me to give it even more gravitas. But despite that, I don't remember reading any of the other stories.
I might have read one or two, but I never read the Superman Family book. So, that's on my reading list. You know, I'm trying to work my way up to that, but I'm only in 1946. So it's going to be a while, folks. But this Silver Age image of Clark Kent that they use with the hat, for some reason, I love that. That just sticks in my head as the iconic Clark Kent.
Well, especially if you're reading the early Golden Age stuff. But then Superman is Speedo. Not so much.
Not so. It would. What page is that on? It wasn't a red Speedo, was it? Because that would have been
page 16.
Page 16.
Yeah, it is a red Speedo with stripes.
See, the stripes ruined it. If he just had it like from his costume, it would have been right on the money. God, the 70s had horrible styles.
Lois has got the bikini going.
And she's rocking it. See, now, is this supposed... This isn't supposed to be the 70s, though, right? Because it's Earth 2. It should be like, what, the 50s?
That's a good question. I don't think it ever actually says.
I would say it's supposed to be the 50s. Based strictly on, like, the cars and things. It could be the early 60s.
See, I was under the impression that, you know, with the goofy timeline and all of that, that they wanted to make it contemporary, but just that this is the style of Earth 2 at this, you know, in 1978.
See, the only reason I guessed it should be the 50s is because present day Earth 2 Superman in the 70s has gray hair, right?
Yeah, it's true. He has the gray temples, the Reed Richards temples.
That's my only guess.
Well, they could easily make it the 50s because in the late 50s was when we switched over to Earth 1.
Right.
So it could be, you know, this is picking up where the stories had left off.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. It was a cool idea, I think.
Yeah, and I think if they had worked at it, I think it could have been a good ongoing idea. But you know, again, back then, having a married superhero, well, a married superhero with his wife knowing his identity and, you know, all of that, and, you know, changing the status quo. I mean, because I guess Jay Garrick was married.
Right. Which we're going to get into a lot of that on the next Legends issue with the Flashes.
Right.
But what is nice about this is that they evolve Lois, where Clark gets to be himself, not knowing he's Superman, and she falls in love with Clark. That's the key to all this. Whereas, you know, being in love with Superman, to me, it's more like the rock star. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's because he's famous, he's strong, he's got powers. It's not, oh, you know, who he is.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And that we get a parallel to that in the second story as well.
Right. You know what I'm curious about?
What's
that? I'm curious about a lot of things, but we can only address certain ones here. The fortress, or what do they call it? Is it called the fortress? His mountaintop retreat. I'm curious when they introduced that.
I think that was a 1950s thing. I always got the impression, and I could be totally wrong on this because I'd done zero research. And the thought didn't even occur to me until you just brought it up. So forgive me if I'm totally off base, but I always thought that the fortress, the mountaintop retreat, whatever, was created in other media, like on the radio show or something like that, and that they then put it into into the comics.
Could very well be. I am not in a position to dispute you.
And I have no reason to actually know that I'm right.
But it's a cool concept, and I would be curious to see where it kicks in originally.
I just put in Fortress of Solitude in Wikipedia. And the original version of the Fortress of Solitude first appeared in the Doc Savage pulps. Golden Age Superman did not have an Arctic fortress, but a mountain sanctuary, which was located in a mountain range on the outskirts of Metropolis. Superman's Silver Age fortress, which debuted in 1958, was located in the Arctic. But when, I want to see when it first appears. Oh, here we go. Superman's Secret Citadel first appeared in Superman number 17. Where it is said to be built into a mountain on the outskirts of Metropolis. By issue number 58, it is referred to as the Fortress of Solitude. Wow, seems at a glance to be a freestanding castle, which is said to be located in a polar waste. When the fortress reappears in 1958 for the first time, takes center stage in a story, it is again an underground complex in a mountainous cliffside. So it seems like it did appear first in issue number 17 of Superman.
Hmm. Wow. So then I read it and I didn't even. That's how memorable it was.
And certainly not from the Superman radio drama.
Which fortress would you like to buy? We have three to choose from.
We have the underground mountain one. We have the freestanding mountain one. And we have the Arctic range.
Look at the view. What is your budget?
Now, I understand this is a little bit of a fixer-upper. But we have a motivated seller.
A guy with a mask and a sidekick. He's looking to unload this.
Okay, I'm ready to rate it, unless you got anything else.
No, I think we pretty much beat it to death.
I think this cover is iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I don't think it is absolutely like the best drawn cover. But I just think what it is really stands out. And it's almost like because of what it is, it makes it even better than it is, which is, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense.
So I think if I was just rating this on just the artwork, I would give it probably, I mean, it's good. I'd give it like a B+. But I think because it's such a key scene and such a pivotal moment, and the fact that it doesn't fall on its face, it's still well drawn, brings it up to an A or maybe even an A+. The interior artwork is pretty much your standard Kurt Swan, which is good. And as I've said many times, because I grew up with Kurt Swan as Superman's main artist, he's the person who I always think of. But it's not, you know, his artwork was very rarely dynamic. It was always, you know, just good. And this lives up to that. So I think, you know, it's a B. It's good. It's not great. It's, you know, but it's solid Superman artwork. And the story, I think the story is very well done because it brings you, it gives you the feeling of the Golden Age. It gives you reasons for everything that happens and you follow along and you enjoy it. I'm going to say an A for the story, and overall I'm going to give the book an A.
I'm right there with you. I love the cover. To me, the cover's an A+. I like the little touches. Today, if I looked at this cover, I know it's Earth 2 right off the bat. When I was 7, I didn't realize that. But looking at it now, it's like, you see the Daily Star there. That's the giveaway. I kind of am amazed at how he's holding that car up when he's not even holding it. It's kind of like balanced on his hand.
Yeah.
But it's like I get a kick out of that with the tin cans hanging off the bat, the back. You know, that's always been a trope you see in movies and things. I have never in my life seen cans tied to the back of a car.
No, me neither.
But to me, it's a beautiful cover. It rates an A+. The interior art is very, very good. I'm a sucker for Kurt Swan because that's what I grew up with. And it's kind of a reference point to me, whether I like art or not. The Kurt Swan art to me, I always felt was kind of realistic looking. Whereas later on, we'll get some artists who are very, it almost becomes like an anime, which is a kind of a funky style to it. And it's always the Kurt Swan art that I measure it up against. So for me, the art is an A-. And the story, it's, you know, it is a little bit goofy with Colonel Future being the villain and the wizard. But in a sense, it all does work out and it makes sense. It's you couldn't physically kill Superman, but he was able to wipe his mind and get rid of him. So yeah, the plot works. I like the development of Lois Lane. As I said earlier, how she goes from being this obsessive compulsive almost with, you know, needing to know who Superman is and being always in love with Superman, that finally it's like the scales fall away from her eyes. And she sees what's right in front of her. And he's able to be himself too. Which, you know, I don't think it was. I always say when it comes to Clark Kent, my favorite Clark Kent is still the Clark Kent from the TV show with George Reeves. Because he's kind of, you know, he's suave. He's a tough guy. He's not, you know, like Christopher Reeve. When he plays Clark Kent, it's almost you say to yourself, other than being able to type fast, how the hell is this guy even a reporter? So I liken this, he got to be who Clark Kent really is, and that's what wins Lois over. So for me, the story is, it's a solid A. The overall grade of this book is an A. And you should read it if you haven't.
Well, it is a pivotal book.
It's just a lot of fun. It's got such good memories, you know? It's like you look back at your childhood and it's always, this was great. Shall we move on?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, you all might want to get yourselves a drink or a sandwich before we start the synopsis of this book, because this is going to be a long one. This is Superman, the Wedding Album, cover dated December of 1996. On sale, October 9th of 96, for a whopping $4.95. The creative team, I'm not even going there. This is a who's who of anyone who ever touched a Superman book. You can look it up yourself on Mike's Amazing World. The editor, though, is Joey Cavallari. We open our story. Lois Lane looks stunning as she stands holding a bouquet of flowers in her wedding dress. Well, I guess the moment we've all been waiting for has finally arrived. Lois and Clark are finally going to tie the... Hold it. Scratch that. A turn of the page reveals that Lois is getting married to a drug lord known Rajik Naga. Lois, it turns out, suggested marriage to the drug kingpin after getting caught snooping around his operation and being threatened with death. Legal disclaimer, a wife cannot be forced to testify against her husband. Talk about a shotgun wedding. The wedding flight into Metropolis is fully decked out with champagne and a special wedding cake, which will allow Naga's product to pass customs. Taking advantage of her groom's excitement, Lois uses the champagne bottle as a weapon and incapacitates him and his thugs. Once the thugs have been turned over to the authorities, it's off to the planet to make headlines. At the Daily Planet, managing editor Clark Kent and his staff work tirelessly to find Lois, who's been missing for weeks. Clark retreats to his office, thinking about how badly he misses Lois. Ever since he lost his powers, he has trusted in the power of the press to find her. He pulls out the engagement ring he wanted to propose to Lois with out of his pocket and takes a good look at it. Moments later, Lois barges into the planet, her wedding dress torn to shreds. She has come to file her story, but Clark wants an opportunity to speak with her in private. Clark is quick to inform her of recent events during her absence. Perry has been on leave due to his chemotherapy, and Clark has become managing editor. Lois asks why Clark didn't tell her, and he replies it was Perry's wishes. Clark then reaches for a glass of water, only to knock it to the floor. When Lois attempts to help him, she sees his hand is bleeding and realizes he's lost his powers. Clark tells her that he's been without powers ever since the sun went out. See Final Night crossover. He feels frustrated, thinking about every crime and disaster Superman could have stopped, but he can't. Lois comforts him, saying he can still help people as a reporter. Lois searches his coat for a handkerchief to cover his wound and finds the engagement ring. Clark held on to it for the same reason Lois returned to Metropolis. As much as Lois loves Clark, she's not going to accept a marriage proposal as overdramatic as that. So she makes him do it the right way. Clark finally asks Lois to marry him, and she accepts. The Daily Planet staff find them kissing. Later at Clark's, we find his parents visiting. Jimmy calls seeking to be a photographer at the wedding, but Clark has already hired one. Jimmy feels that after going to work at WGBS, his friendship with Clark has been deteriorating, especially after the story he did on Lori Lamaris and the Luther fiasco. Jimmy is determined to save his friendship with Clark. Meanwhile, at Lois's apartment, Lois, her mom, and sister are choosing flower arrangements for the wedding. Her father, Sam, opposes the wedding and still blames Clark for making his daughter sad, even though Lois tells him to get over it. Then Martha arrives, who asks for Lois's help in picking out a dress. This is all a pretense, so Lucy and Ella can prepare for the bridal shower. A shocked Sam hurriedly leaves to rent a tuxedo for the wedding. Clark and Jonathan have reached the tuxedo store, but Perry and Keith fail to show up. Clark has gotten news that Perry had a bad reaction to the chemo and may not make the wedding. Jonathan holds out hope. At the store, they find Sam, who makes no secret of still being angry at Clark. The three men try out suits, but Jonathan does not appreciate Sam's hostility toward Clark. Eventually, they find the perfect suits. Back at the Lane house, Lucy and her friends, Lori, Maggie, and Toby, have finished preparing the bridal shower and surprise Lois, who has just returned with Martha. Lois gets various home appliances as shower gifts. Then the group departs on a search for Lois's wedding dress. She tries on many, does not like any of them, so she asks her clothing designer, Jeanette, probably Jeanette Kahn, to make a new dress especially for her. Meanwhile, Clark asks Ronald Winston to modify his wedding ring to include an inscription that says, "To Lois, love Clark." He also wants to add a Superman symbol to the ring, since he's Lois's Superman. At the same time, Lois and Martha search for a suitable apartment for Clark and Lois to move into after the wedding. All the apartments have a major flaw. The last one seems perfect, but has a huge list of bidders and a long waiting list. Later, while having lunch at a restaurant, Lois talks to Martha about how her relationship with Clark has changed for the better. After that, Lois goes to the license bureau to obtain the marriage license. I don't know, but here in New York, you both have to go. She runs into Maggie, who tells her of an empty building with good apartments and low rents. Maggie knows of the building because of a previous case involving Superman. We're going to get some action now, folks. Someone had attacked Professor Hamilton with a kryptonite-powered weapon at the Ace of Clubs, the bar owned by Superman's friend Bebo. The whole place caught fire, with Hamilton and Bebo still inside. Since there was kryptonite at the bar, Superman couldn't go in and was forced to sit on the sidelines and let the firemen do their job. Unfortunately, the firemen couldn't get it under control. Unwilling to risk any more lives, Superman enters the building despite the kryptonite threat and saved Hamilton and Bebo. Superman discovered that someone had removed the kryptonite, which is why he didn't weaken. With Hamilton and Bebo under medical care, Superman flew off to find the assailant. Unfortunately, the building is still in rough shape, even if the state inspector certified it as sound. But Lois still thanks Maggie for her help. After a day of work at the Daily Planet, Clark goes to the electronics shop to pick up his gifts for his ushers. but finds the shop being robbed by an armed thief. Wanting to help, Clark puts on his Superman outfit and intercepts the robber. Frightened, the robber drops his gun and the stolen money and attempts to escape, but is caught by Maxima. Maxima has come to Earth to give Superman another chance to be his mate, but to be her mate. But discovering he is powerless, Maxima becomes offended and leaves. Jonathan and Martha visit Perry. Perry thanks Jonathan for convincing him to give up smoking. Even if he has lung cancer, he has a chance to survive. Jonathan asks Perry if he's going to come to Clark's wedding, and Perry tells him even Superman couldn't keep him away. Bebo throws Clark's bachelor party at the Ace of Clubs, with Jimmy and Pete Ross in attendance. Suddenly meet a regular patron who comes in to play pool arrives, but Bebo insists this is a private party. When Meat becomes aggressive, Bebo throws him out. Seconds later, Jonathan arrives and tells everyone there is a group of bikers outside. The bikers barge in and the party becomes an all-out bar brawl. Meanwhile, at Lois's bachelorette party, a man attempts to come onto her, but she makes him trip into a pie. Of course, you need a pie at these things, much to her and her friend's amusement. Superman runs across the streets to reach the Ace of Clubs until he comes across Nega, the same drug lord who had confronted Lois earlier. Nega and his henchmen had barely averted arrest, and now they were attempting to return to Boutron. Since there was no time to call the police, Superman confronts the criminals by himself. Superman defends himself until one of the thugs hits him in the back with a rock. Conveniently, he found a rock in the streets of Metropolis. Luckily, Batman arrives, and the two heroes dispose of the criminals together. As Naga and his men are taken away by the police, Superman and Batman have a private conversation. Batman is curious about Superman's change of mind about getting married. And Superman replies, he and Lois were miserable without each other. And together, they're just happy. The world's finest stand on a rooftop. And in the distance, they watch as Lois and her friends scare off the guy harassing them earlier at a bachelorette party. Batman now understands why Clark and Lois belong together and has also taken measures to protect Metropolis while Clark and Lois are on their honeymoon. Under Batman's request, a group of heroes descend upon Metropolis and stand ready to protect the city. According to Batman, they are not aware of Superman's upcoming nuptials, only that he will be away on a secret mission. And as a wedding gift, Lois and Clark have been moved to the top of the list for their choice apartment. As it turns out, Bruce Wayne owns the building. Clark finally makes it to the Ace of Clubs, where Jimmy asks him why he has not asked him to be the photographer at the wedding. Clark replies he already hired a photographer because he wants Jimmy to be his best man, to which an honored Jimmy accepts. Later, Clark and Lois have their rehearsal dinner. There, Jimmy apologizes to Lori for televising the story that accused her of trafficking stolen antiques. Lori accepts his apology and advises him not to let ambition get in the way of the important things. Jimmy also catches a glimpse of Perry talking with Jonathan and Martha. When Jimmy talks with Perry, he becomes aware of his chemotherapy sessions. Meanwhile, Lana feels happy. Clark has finally met someone to spend the rest of his life with, much like she has done with Pete. Suddenly, Sam calls out Clark and vents all his animosity towards him, saying he does not deserve someone like Lois. Lois having just had enough of her father's insufferable attitude, says Clark is the man she loves and she will be marrying him, whether her father accepts it or not. Even Ella agrees with her daughter's decision, causing a bitter Sam to leave. The big day finally arrives, with multiple guests coming to the ceremony. Jimmy's camera crew films the event. Meanwhile, Lex watches the wedding in his surveillance room, having hacked Jimmy's camera feed. Lex still can't believe Lois is marrying Clark and thinks the only thing worse would be if she was marrying Superman. Clark, having returned to his old hairstyle, the classic version, gets ready for the wedding. As Jimmy straightens Clark's bow tie, he reveals he knows Clark and Superman are one and the same. But it's not Jimmy, it's Mr. McSpitalik, who has come to congratulate Clark for his wedding as well. He says it'll be fun to mess with both Clark and his wife. Clark asks if Mr. McSpitalik has something to do with his power loss, but McSpitalik denies having anything to do with that. Still, he expresses confidence Clark will get his powers back and disappears seconds later. The ceremony finally starts. All of Clark and Lois's friends and acquaintances are attending. Perry has made it to the wedding along with his wife. They are seated alongside Ella, while Keith is the ring bearer. And for once, Sam has decided to swallow his pride and to attend the wedding. Without further incident, the wedding goes as planned, and the priest pronounces Clark and Lois as husband and wife. At long last, Superman and Lois Lane are happily married.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
I'm not crying. What are you talking about?
Okay, I get some in my eye. Honestly, I mean, this was a good story. It was fun to read and all that, but it didn't feel like it had the same. It's weird because it's the Earth One Superman now. It's the real.
It's the main guy.
And yet it didn't feel like as important to me as the first time that it went down with the secondary guy who used to be the main guy, sort of. But, you know, I mean, overall, it's. I would say the biggest problem I had with this is that the narrative flow seems to jump all over the place. It's just, you know, it's almost hard to follow the through line of what's going on at points. You know, we start off with that faux wedding with Lois marrying the gangster, which really kind of strikes me as a little unbelievable that this guy would fall for it.
That's almost like out of like the 50s or something like that.
Yeah. So that, you know, that seemed a little strange, but it was still kind of cool. You know, it shows Lois is tough and she can handle herself and she, you know, she beats the guy up, which is kind of cool. Then, you know, there's a lot of stuff about, you know, basically Clark getting used to the idea that he doesn't have the superpowers, but he still has the same sense of responsibility. I like, you know, where he goes out and he's, you know, he goes out with the costume and basically just tries to intimidate the guy, which is successful. But then the next time that, you know, that he has to actually fight the people. So, you know, some interesting stuff with that. I don't know why, if he lost his powers, he's wearing the costume underneath his regular clothes anyway, unless he just got so used to doing it that he's not comfortable without it there.
I can't imagine he's more comfortable with another suit of clothes underneath the suit.
Except and for the fact that he's done it his whole life, you know, his whole adult life.
And it's not like the Bronze or the Silver Age where, like, the costume is at least bulletproof.
Well, I guess if, you know, even with the costume was bulletproof because it was made from the blanket that he came in. But then if he lost his powers because the sun went out, would that material lose its inability to be damaged?
I don't know. In the Silver Age, the suit was just the suit. suit. I don't. The son didn't have anything to do with that back in the old days.
So, you know, style wise, I was disturbed. Out of respect for Michael Bailey, I'll call it a ponytail and not a mullet. But I hated that look.
I almost said that. I don't want to offend Mike with that.
I really did hate when they made him grow his hair long. I just thought it looked stupid. So I was glad that in the story they get him to cut it by the end. The other thing, though, just style-wise, and I guess it's a reflection of the 1990s, but when the outfit he's wearing when he's exercising, it's like, really? You know, I expect Clark to have just a little bit more dignity than to wear this kind of thing.
He's getting physical, man.
Yeah, he can be in Olivia Newton-John's video with that look. I also like, and it's one of the things I liked about the recent movie. I like when Superman looks like he's physically fit, but doesn't necessarily look like a weightlifter. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, and you know, I've made no bones about it. I actually enjoyed Henry Cavill as Superman. I didn't enjoy everything he was in as Superman, but I thought his portrayal was decent. But he, you know, he had that pumped up look, which I don't think you need to have. I mean, Christopher Reeve was physically fit, but he didn't look like a weightlifter. Now in this movie, the same thing is true. Like he doesn't look muscle bound at all. In fact, at points, the costume actually looks like it's loose fitting on him. And I kind of appreciate that because his strength isn't based on just muscles.
Right.
So, you know, like I don't think you need to draw him like he could be in, you know, the WWE. And here, when they have in his weightlifting outfit, he clearly could be, you know, he could be fighting Arnold Schwarzenegger and, you know, in movies at that time.
I pick things up, I put them down.
So I didn't like that. I guess I think you're right that the character of Jeanette is supposed to be Jeanette Kahn because Jeanette Kahn had that big Mary Tyler Moore smile that they keep drawing here. You know, and just the different things that go on, you know, Lois with some of the outfits that when she's trying on wedding dresses. Yeah, that seemed realistic. And again, it's like we talked about in the beginning, you know, there's planning stages to planning a wedding. You know, this at least hits on it. This has, you know, her having to find the dress, him hiring a photographer, him having to ask Jimmy to be his best man. You know, there's things that go into it all.
Right.
I think the artwork was not well served by the fact that you had so many different people doing it. I know you know, that this is a common trope to have, you know, on a pivotal issue like this, to have a bunch of the people who've drawn the character come back and draw it for you know, certain things. But it feels the story already has a feeling of jumping around too much to me. So then you add that into it, and it serves to hurt the continuity of the actual narrative to me even more.
What I think, what's a negative with this story is, it works out great if you're reading, you know, like the whole run, and you finally get to this point. We've had post-crisis a lot of fits and starts where we're getting close that they're going to get married and something happens. He dies.
That's something.
It's a big one. There's a breakup. Then they finally get back together. The sun goes out. But what I'm just saying is, reading it all in a row, it's fine. But when, if you pull this out like we did now, the old issue holds up better because you can read it in a vacuum. With this, there's so many other things contributing to it. Why doesn't he have his powers? Why does he have a mullet? Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just, you can't just drop it in.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head when you said, you know, reading it in a vacuum, which is what we're doing here, which is kind of the theory of this show, is to just take an issue and take it on its own, even if it's one part of a continued story, although we do obviously have things where we go over repeated episodes of stuff. But, you know, just this one issue on its own without knowing the other history that's going on. Yeah, I do think there's a little bit of an element of, you know, hey, why is this like this? Why is that like that? Who is this guy? Who's this Bibbo guy?
Who are all these people that they, you know, because it's they bring everybody in that ever showed up in this comic book that was of any significance.
And they don't all have enough time to explain. Like the Maxima stuff, they don't really give you a good background for that. It's either you know what's going on or you have to just blow past it quickly.
Right. I would gamble there's a lot of people out there today who would go, who the hell is Maxima?
Oh, yeah. So I think that's where the story hurts a little bit. But I do like the fact that, you know, like if he was getting married, you know, Batman would have some involvement somewhere. So I'm glad that they hit on that. You know, he would have Jimmy as his best man. You know, there's things in here that do ring true. And I... Overall, I thought it was a good story. I didn't think it was a great story, but I thought it was a good story. And, you know, this is them, like we said, making the main guy, the Superman of current continuity, get married to Lois, which is, you know, I'm not going to say it's totally groundbreaking because by this time we already had, you know, Peter Parker married to Mary Jane. And, you know, there was precedent for it. But it's still pretty significant to have Superman married. You know, the other thing, like I would have said, well, they'll never have him have kids, but you know, we went there.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, there is stuff that they've explored that I wasn't sure they ever would. So that's kind of cool. I'm just, you know, I'm paging through it as we're talking, and the artwork to me, not only is it a little bit disconcerting that it just changes in style. There's some points where I think the artwork is really good, and there's some points where I think it's not really, not that it's bad, but it's not really fitting for this. You know, like I wouldn't put certain artists on Superman for any length of time, put it that way. I don't think they really suit him.
You measure it up against, for me, the current Swan standard.
Well, Kurt Swan was always very consistent. You know, that's what you always had with him. And, you know, you lose that consistency here. What's the big wedding dress place in Manhattan that everybody has to go to?
Oh, David's Bridal. That was the big one my wife went to.
No, there's a bigger one than that.
Oh, you're saying we're not big enough? Well, I think we're done.
No, you're not nearly big enough.
Well, let me take a look. Hold on. If only I had a device I could look at. Now I'm going to get all emails about buying a wedding dress. NYC. Bride. Let's see.
I guarantee you I could ask my wife and she'll know.
Kleinfeld,
that's it. That is the place. And I assume when she's going for her wedding dress in this, and what is it, Katzenberg's or something like that?
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be, I guess.
Yeah, I assume it's Kleinfeld's.
For over 70 years.
My stepdaughter is going to be the maid of honor at a wedding, and they just went to Kleinfeld's to do the dress shopping. And I was shocked. They charge you, I think it's $150 to come in and do the whole presentation for you. But that gets you, I think, an hour and a half. And if you're planning on spending longer than that, you have to pay more. This is just for the privilege of shopping there. And apparently they paid something like $500. And they had like a 3-hour thing where they served them with, you know, think drinks and snacks or whatever, but I was blown away by it.
Imagine walking into the Ford dealer and they tell you, oh, you got to pay $50 to come in and look at the cars.
Well, it was, you know, to relate it to comic books beyond the fact that there's a wedding issue, I think that's what you and I had said that last time we went to New York Comic Con, when we said, I'm not going to come back here. They charged us, you know, close to $100 just to come in here for the privilege of buying comics here.
And to stand online for how many blocks did we have to wait to get into the place? And we only lucked out because Dario was farther up the line.
Shh, people will think we cut the line.
Hey, you don't pay attention.
You snooze, you lose.
You snooze, you lose. You're in New York City. You got to pay attention to what's going on.
So, you know, it's... But just that blew me away. But it is like that has become a big thing. The the shopping for the dress together and the proposal has become. I mean, it was always an event, but now it's become like an event where people want to have a photographer present for it. There's things that about it that have just blown out of proportion. And the funny thing is, it feels like the higher the divorce rate gets, the more epic the weddings have to be.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is, you know, they come to Borough Hall in Staten Island to get the marriage license. And they, you can get married there, too. You know, it's right. Like City Hall. And right up the block is where we are. The courthouse. People will show up, and you know, in New York, you have to wait 24 hours before you can get married, or you can get what they call a judicial waiver, where they'll send them up to the courthouse, and a judge will give you a waiver to get married less than 24 hours. We like to joke.
We would wait, but she's going to have this baby now. This baby's not waiting.
We like to say we should make them sit through some of the divorces first and then be like, oh, you sure you want to go through with it? You know, like pre-Cana.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You know, I probably could have done without Mr. Mixelpick being in this. That was probably my least favorite.
Yeah, that was just like they had to throw everybody in.
And I was surprised that Lex Luthor wasn't more of a presence in the issue, but I was okay with that. I was surprised, but it didn't bother me.
All we needed was Brainiac to swing by too and say, hey, just want to say good luck.
or maybe they could have... The Toy Man or somebody like that, because I know how much you love those issues.
Yeah, the Toy Man. And the Prankster, another one of my favorites.
So, we rating or you got anything else?
I don't think I have anything. I kind of lost my voice with that synopsis. I think this is a two-man job, and, you know, Scott bailed out and left me here. I'm just kidding.
I can't make it. You do the synopsis.
He looked at the length of the issue. He went, oh, yeah, I can't do it.
I can't talk. So, well, this is your book, so you're going to read first.
All right. Well, there's two covers to this book. One is just pretty much a white cover, and the other is kind of very similar to the last book with, you know, Lois in a wedding dress and Superman carrying her over the city of Metropolis, but it's for real this time. I think that's a good... So, needless to say, I'm going to rate the cover with a picture on it and not just the plain white cover. I like the cover. It transmits what the story is about. It is the event of the century. I think the art is nice. I'm giving it a solid B+. The interior art, it's a mixed bag. Some of it's I like, some of it's really good. I love the final shot at the end where I believe I do have the real issue. I think it's a fold-out issue where, you know, it's a fold-out where it's, I think, 3 pages, something like that, kind of akin to the death of Superman at the end, where it's just that church scene with Lois and Clark kissing. Everyone who's probably worked on the book is in the crowd. You can see Jeanette Kahn. You can see Marv Wolfman. Jerry Ordway, I see. Mike Carlin. The whole band is together. I believe it's Jerry Siegel is the priest.
I didn't know that.
Have this whole church scene. And then you have superimposed above the crowd, almost looks like a hologram of Superman and Lois kissing. Frankly, that's the best shot in the whole book. That scene I would give an A plus to. But when you have to average it in with some of the other art in here, it's like I said, some of it's good, some of it, I'm not saying it's bad, it's just I don't care for the style. I'm going to give the overall grade on the interior art as a B. The story, the pluses to the story are, it's probably the most realistic wedding book you're ever going to get. Going through all the steps leading up to get married, from the proposal to the renting of the suits. You know, they got to try on the suits and, you know, they give them this powder blue tuxedo type suit jacket. And, you know, they're kind of like a little taken back. And it's like, no, that's just to get the sizes. Don't worry. They're going to be normal. To the bachelorette party. Then there's the superhero stuff thrown in with the motorcycle gang and the story from the past, which is really the only Superman part you get, you know, of Superman action. So I'm going to give the overall grade to the story a B plus. In total, this is a B plus story.
Okay, I'm not too far off from you. Yeah, the white cover actually has the embossed Superman symbol on it. That's the one that I have. But the other cover, the one that you mentioned, the one that's actually worth rating, is by John Byrne, by the way. Yeah, it's pretty solid. I think it's pretty good. It definitely conveys what's going on, and it, you know, it's John Byrne. How bad could it be, really? So I'm going to say a B plus on the cover. I think it's pretty good. The interior art, I am really troubled to grade it because there's never a point where I feel like it's bad. No. But there are points where I feel like it doesn't really fit. Again, where the art doesn't necessarily, it's not a style that I would want for a Superman book on a regular basis. But despite that, I think everything in it is at least, good. Some of it is better. Some of it is worse. Some of it is better. Some of it doesn't necessarily fit stylistically for me, but it's all well drawn. That image that you talked about, the fold-out page, is awesome, actually. I think that is an A-plus page. Overall, it's difficult to come up with a grade, but I'm going to say a B because some of it's good, some of it's really good, and some of it is worthy of A, some of it isn't. So I'm going to say a B-plus, actually. The story is all over the map, and that's my biggest problem with it. I never really felt like there was a narrative flow. It didn't feel like a page turner to me. It almost felt like a little bit of a slug to get through some points because it just kept jumping all over the place. So I'm going to say a C plus on the story because I think it could have been better, and especially when you're doing something as epic as this. So overall, I think it translates to a B plus book though.
I could almost see for the story, sometimes less is more.
Yeah, sometimes. I think that's the almost the lesson we learned from comparing these two books. So, you know, what I'd like to do is I'd like to thank Superman and Lois for inviting us to this wedding. And I hope their firstborn child is a masculine child, as they say in The Godfather.
You've got the envelope, right? Because I didn't bring it. I thought you had the envelope.
Oh, jeez. Maybe we could just do the Irish goodbye.
Yeah, look, we're just going to go out to the car. We'll be back in a few minutes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.